From WBUR Boston, I'm Wade Goodwin in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. In my hometown of Dallas now, the Mary Kay Cosmetics Convention is in full swing, with the pink Cadillacs on display, the beauty consultants at their made-up best, and the imploring wave of "You can do it" coming from the podium. But beyond the success stories, a Harper's Magazine investigation found a company that, quote, preys on women. This hour on Point, Beyond the Pink Sheen at Mary Kay. You can join the conversation. Have you bought skincare and makeup from Mary Kay? Worked as a beauty consultant? What was your experience? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from New York is Virginia Soule Smith. She's a freelance journalist and author of the cover article in Harper's August issue, The Pink Pyramid Scheme, How Mary Kay Cosmetics Preys on Desperate Housewives. You can read the full article at our website, onpointradio.org. And with me from Northern Virginia is Lynn, who asked not to use her real name. She joined Mary Kay in 2002 and 2 years later gave up her $75,000 a year full-time job to focus on her Mary Kay business. In 2011, she left Mary Kay with more than $15,000 in credit card debt and a basement full of old inventory. I'd like to welcome both Virginia Soule Smith and Lynn.
Thank you for having me.
Virginia, let's start with you, if we could. Talk to me about how you came to this story.
So in 2009, I actually enrolled in beauty school as a separate reporting project. I wanted to look at how women interact with the beauty industry. And one of the first things that struck me when I got to beauty school was how many of my classmates were working with Mary Kay and other direct sales cosmetics brands. These were women who, you know, this was right at the height of the recession. They were dealing with unemployment. It was a lot of single mothers, a lot of strapped financial situations. And they were all looking to Mary Kay for the answer because Mary Kay built it up as work with us and you can have this lucrative full-time career opportunity. You can have it all. But what worried me was that they all seemed to be buying more products than they could sell. So I started looking into it, and I found, you know, these weren't just a handful of isolated incidents that I had encountered at this one place. If you look online, there's thousands of women who are talking about how they've been through the same situation where they just can't make these businesses work. The biggest is a site called PinkTruth.com, which has over 9,000 members, and that's a lot of unhappy former Mary Kay ladies.
How did you end up getting involved with Mary Kay? How did it develop?
Right. So what I did was, you know, I started interviewing anyone I could find who had worked with the company and hearing their stories. I had talked to Lynn and heard, you know, what she had been through and, you know, kind of expanding out from the first handful of women I met, really trying to get my arms around the situation. And then I realized, you know, in order to find out what is really happening and what these women are really experiencing in terms of sales pitches, in terms of the sort of high pressure tactics that they told me they were being used, I had to actually sign up, go in and see what it was like firsthand. So I did. I went to MaryKay.com, I put in my zip code, and I contacted the first sales director in my area just completely at random just to see what is the typical experience like for somebody who expresses interest in working with this company.
And what was your experience?
Well, on the one hand, I was very impressed with the way my sales director, Antonella, told me about all the leadership opportunities, the pictures she painted of her own life, the success that she found in the company. It was very inspiring. It was very much, talking about women helping women and these empowering friendships that they develop. And that was all unbelievably attractive. But what it turned out, once I said, yes, you know, I want to do this, and I bought the $100 starter kit, instantly I was put, she started putting a very high sales pitch pressure on me to spend at least $1,800 on inventory. And when I said I didn't have it, she said, oh, don't worry, you can use a Mary Kay credit card. So it very quickly went from this is a sisterhood, this is women helping women, to how much inventory are you going to buy?
Well, I don't get it. Why was $100 not enough?
$100 gets you the starter kit, which includes some samples. It includes some educational materials on how to actually sell the products, but it doesn't get you any inventory that you can sell to your consumers. So what you can either do is, you know, not buy any inventory, and just if someone wants to order something from you, then you go and order it from Mary Kay, and they have to wait for it to get shipped, and it's a whole long process. Or what you're strongly encouraged to do, and not required, this is important, Mary Kay doesn't require you to buy inventory, but what they strongly encourage you to do at every point, with every contact I had with a Mary Kay sales rep, is to have as much inventory as you can on hand so that you can then host these parties with big, lavish tables of products and have inventory on hand when people want to buy stuff from you.
In your article, you say that they say things like, I know you'll want to buy this because I can tell how serious you are about wanting to sell. Is this something that was specifically directed at you because they could tell that you were somebody who could be successful, do you think?
I think it's rhetoric that they use with everybody. I think what they want you to think when you're getting in with them is – you can be successful, but only if you're really serious. And being really serious means spending a lot of money with us right now. You know, that's how they tell you that if you're going to, quote, work your business right, you have to have these products on hand. You have to stock. You can't sell from an empty storefront. They use all of this language, which, you know, on paper, yes, a business does need to have products on hand. But if you don't have any customers lined up yet, if you haven't figured out how you're going to make a sale, that's a big investment to make when you perhaps, again, like the women that I met in the story, a lot of them don't have jobs, don't have other income sources. They're not really in a position to put $1,800 on a credit card.
But Virginia, I know you can do it. At the end of the day, you have to sell this product. You have to invite people to your home, or you've got to come to their home and they invite other women to their home. How difficult is it to gather a group of 5 or 6 or 8 women into somebody's home?
I think it's not very difficult to do it the first time because all your friends will be excited for you. They'll want to help you out. But I think to sustain this as a business, what I heard over and over is that it is incredibly difficult. You need to be going out, pounding the pavement, trying to meet like 30 women a week to try to recruit more people to have parties. And the stories I heard over and over were people having parties where nobody actually showed up, or parties where you sold maybe a lipstick or maybe a hand cream, but certainly not enough to account for the time and effort that you're putting in, the money you're spending on snacks for the party, on transportation, getting to your appointments. I mean, this is a huge investment that the women are asked to make, and to actually move the products, it just doesn't add up. The math's not there.
There's a better way to do it, and that's to recruit other women who you then convince to sell, and you earn part of what they sell. Is that right?
Correct. That's really the only way to actually make real money at Mary Kay. You know, when we started digging into trying to find out how much the women do make in the business, and this is extremely difficult to pin down because Mary Kay Corporate actually doesn't track the retail sales of their consultants. They only know what their wholesale sales are, which means they only know how much their consultants are buying from them, not whether they actually sell them to the end consumer.
Lynn, let me bring Lynn into this. Lynn, we're kind of talking about you. tell me about your experience.
Okay, well, I started as a consultant, as all people do, and I was working a very, very high-stress job, and I did not intend to ever actually do my business full-time. I never intended to become a director, but as it turned out, I was actually pretty good at sales, and I started with $1,200 and in inventory, and when I went to my director's house, I saw this gigantic room full of inventory. And to me at the time, that kind of said success. Like, wow, she has a lot of customers. She has to have all of this inventory to service her customers. And that's kind of how she painted it. And so I actually purchased additional inventory right at the beginning because I really felt like I wasn't going to be, I believe that I fell for it hook, line, and sinker. I was not going to be able to service my customers if I did not have this product on my shelf. What Virginia didn't mention is that if you do choose to sell product as you get orders, Mary Kay actually has, they say they have no requirements for purchasing, but if you do not spend $200 in one shot, which is $400 a retail product, then you actually have to pay retail price. So once you have purchased your 200 wholesale or 400 retail, then for the next 2 months approximately, you can continue purchasing at that reduced rate. But it resets. So if you only do one order of $200 and then you don't do another $200 order in the next month, you're going to have to eventually place another large $200 order. So it's really hard if somebody just buys a lipstick. You're not making any money. And every time they ship to you, they're also charging you shipping costs, which when I left was approximately $8, no matter how much you bought, which isn't so bad if you buy $1,800 worth of product, but was a problem if you're only buying a $13 lipstick. As for me, my husband at the time, and I am divorced now, but my husband had encouraged me because I was such a good salesperson to quit my full-time job. I was very stressed out at my full-time job, and I worked about 75 hours a week. It was really not the best situation to be in. And he saw how happy I was doing skincare classes, and he had spoken to a few directors who all said how much money you make as a director. And he really believed, he kind of fell for it too, and he said, why don't we try this? Why don't we see if we can do it? And so I gave up my full-time job, took a part-time job just so I would have steady income. But eventually gave that up too and became a director. What I later found out was that most directors lie. And I really hate to say that because a lot of directors really were my friends. But a lot of directors lie about how much money they make. And when you go to a Mary Kay event and they ask, what is your high check? They always ask the directors, what's your high check? Well, that high check that they had might have been
okay, Lynn, we're going to have to take a break here. Please hold. We're talking about what's behind the record sales at Mary Kay. You can join the conversation. What do you make of Virginia Soul Smith's reporting? I'm Wade Goodwin in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're taking a look inside the record sales at Mary Kay in a December 2011 report on ABC News, which described Mary Kay Cosmetics as a bright spot in a weak economy. Reporter Ryan Owens talked about Mary Kay associate Courtney Armstrong's success recruiting a team.
Courtney and her team sell enough makeup to keep her in one of those famous Mary Kay pink Cadillacs. This is her second SUV, and she's well positioned for another.
How do you explain continued success when so many businesses are having so much trouble?
They're concerned about the stability of their job. They're concerned about the stability of their husband's job. And so they're looking for a backup plan. They're looking for a way to be able to make extra money and have something else just in case that doesn't work out.
We're talking with Virginia Soul Smith, freelance journalist and author of the cover article in Harper's August issue, The Pink Pyramid Scheme, How Mary Kay Cosmetics Preys on Desperate Housewives. And with us is Lynn, who chose not to use her real name. She joined Mary Kay in 2002 and left in 2011 with more than $15,000 in credit card debt and a basement full of old inventory. Lynn, let me go back to you. What happened? I mean, it sounded like it was going well, and then it didn't.
Going great, and then it didn't because you work really hard to become a director. And I know that in a lot of direct sales companies, the title director comes very easily. But in Mary Kay, at least when I became a director, and they have changed the rules somewhat since then, you had to build to 30. You could go into qualification for directorship when you had 8 team members, and you had to build to 30 unit members in 4 months with $16,000 in production, in wholesale production over those 4 months. So it was a really hard thing to do. And they kind of tell you that is the hardest thing you're going to do in Mary Kay. And it's not really actually true. Because once you get to that directorship, you have to maintain $4,000 in wholesale production every month with you and your unit. Which, you kind of think, well, I'm going to have 30 people. And How could 30 people not do $4,000 in wholesale production in a month? The fact is that, and Mary Kay will tell you this, they have the one-third rule in Mary Kay, that one-third of your unit is always on its way out. One-third is working and one-third is coming in. So in order to maintain a unit, to really have a unit that you're not going to have to supply your own money toward your unit's production, you need to be bringing in 5 new people every month. Mary Kay also will tell you that statistically speaking, a new consultant will place a $600 wholesale order, which if you do have five new people come in, that will bring in the majority of the money that you will need to maintain your directorship. But they also tell you that one in four people who you interview will recruit. So that means you need to be doing 20 interviews per month, plus you need to be doing all of your classes. You need to be meeting people. In my experience, approximately one in four people who I met would actually book a class. So if you start doing the math about how many people you need to meet every month in order to maintain, just maintain your directorship, not to grow, the numbers just become unreal. And I soon found out, you know, my director, who became my senior director, lost her directorship a few months into my directorship. And the other director who had met with my director lost her directorship a few months into my directorship when one of her unit members became one of her offspring.
Let's I'm going to try to let – we've got a lot of callers.
I know.
Let a caller get in here. Let's take Sarah, who's calling from Rye, New York. Sarah, hello.
Hi, Wade. How are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for calling.
I agree with everything that your guests are saying. I sold Mary Kay. I was recruited by a friend. There are so many problems, I think, fraught with this, you know, direct sales business. One is, like, you're arranging parties for your friends, and it becomes very insular, but you're recruiting your friends, so then you're competing with your friends, but you're also competing with other people who are having the cooking and convenience foods parties, handbags, jewelry, woven baskets. And we always say, oh, you don't have to buy anything. You don't have to buy anything. But your friends do feel kind of like they have to buy a little something, a lipstick, as I believe it was Lynn who said. And, you know, it is very difficult to make money. And in the end, it was not worth the work to me to try and make, you know, clear $2,000 for the year for all that work. I got out within the 12-month period where I could get most of my money back. But I went ahead and bought the $600 starter kit. You know, it's very easy to get caught up in it. And, yeah. And then you have, you know, plenty of people who come to your party who don't really like the product.
Let me bring in Mary Kay now. Joining me from Dallas, Texas, is Laura Beitler. She's the Vice President, Mary Kay, who oversees the Department of Compliance. Laura, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me, Wade.
Well, I assume you've been listening on, talk to me about Mary Kay and what you know about your experience and also about the experience of the people that you've been listening to.
Sure, I'd love to. Well, the first thing I want to say is that we are so sorry to hear that anyone feels they've had a negative experience, either as a consumer of our products or as an independent beauty consultant. We have a long and strong history as a premier skincare and color cosmetics company. We've been in business for almost 50 years. We have more than 2.4 million independent beauty consultants around the world selling our products, and the vast, vast majority of them have reported an extremely positive experience. But that said, like anyone who starts a small business, it may or may not be a fit, and no entrepreneur is guaranteed success. As with any small business, it's a lot of hard work. Different people start a Mary Kay business for different reasons. Some are looking for just a little extra income. Especially with the downturn in the economy, some are looking for a new career. Some are just interested in the social aspects. But the bottom line is our business model is very simple. Every beauty consultant signs an agreement directly with the company. She purchases products from the company at a wholesale price, and then she sells that product to her customers at a suggested retail price. So if she sells a lipstick for $13 and she bought it from the company for $6.50, the profits are hers to keep. And it's each person's choice about how much product she wants to buy from the company to purchase to sell to her consumers. But the most important thing I can't stress enough is, and your last caller alluded to this, any beauty consultant who decides to buy product from the company but later decides she wants to end her Mary Kay business can return any product she purchased, and we will refund 90% of that purchase price within 1 year of purchase. So I think, you know, the incredible and continued interest in Mary Kay, along with the longevity, reputation, and success of the company, speaks for itself.
Virginia Sol Smith, a 90% buyback guarantee sounds like a safety net.
It does sound like a safety net. Unfortunately, what Laura didn't mention is that when you are in this program and you are working with these women and these sales directors are putting sales pitches on you all the time, there's actually a tremendous amount of pressure to not take advantage of that safety net. And what a lot of women hear is, you know, you'll be letting your sister sales directors down if you return your product because they lose commissions when you do that.
What does that mean, they lose commissions?
So the sales directors make a percent every time you place an order. And with the 90% buyback, when you return that, and Lynn can speak to this as well because she experienced this, they actually lose the percent that they made off your sales. They have to pay it back. So that's a lot of pressure on the women to feel like, wow, gosh, I've failed at this business. I'm letting everyone down. And what they're not seeing is that this business model, as simple as it is designed to profit the company. It's designed to profit off the workforce. It's not designed to enrich the workforce the way they claim.
Laura, would you like to respond?
Absolutely. What I can share is the pressure that Virginia describes. I will be very frank in saying that kind of pressure it's unacceptable. We work incredibly hard to ensure that our opportunity is accurately reflected and that consultants understand all of the choices they have available to them. We have amazing women in our sales force, but we also understand there may be times when someone's description may differ from the company's 50-year history of describing this opportunity. That's why we provide so many collateral materials to all new and current beauty consultants on every aspect of the business. We want anyone who decides to build her direct sales business with Mary Kay to understand the business model and what her choices are. My job as the person who leads the compliance for Mary Kay is to ensure that our sales force and our employees all understand how to accurately depict this opportunity, and I take it seriously.
Let's take a caller. Nan is calling from Burlington, Vermont. Hello, Nan.
Hello.
Yes, you have a question or a comment?
No, my comment is this woman said that it's not a simple business. It is a simple business. Mary Kay is a simple business. It's not an easy business because people are unpredictable. You will make an appointment. They may or may not hold it. It's all numbers. If you have enough appointments, as I tell my beauty consultants, if you have an appointment on Monday and then you have an appointment on Tuesday and you have an appointment on Thursday and two appointments on Friday, when somebody cancels on Saturday, you say, thank God, I can do my laundry. If you only have one appointment that week, you're going to be devastated. So it's all numbers.
Laura, let me ask you a question. How much of the product ends up with consumers at the end of the day, and how much ends up with your sales force? That seems to be an important number.
Well, I can tell you we've been named as a top beauty brand. Our products have topped many lists of consumer loyalty lists. Several of our products have received the Good Housekeeping Seal of Approval. So I think that record speaks for itself in terms of how many end consumers we have that are incredibly loyal to the company.
Would you say the majority of the product ends up with consumers, or does the majority of the product end up with the sales force?
Absolutely, a majority of the product ends up with end consumers.
Okay. Let's take another caller. Richard is calling from New Milford, Connecticut.
Hi, Wade. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you.
My wife has been a Mary Kay independent consultant for 13 years, and for the past seven, she's been an independent sales director. And from what I've heard, the guests are painting a patently false interpretation of what the company stands for. I was in corporate sales for numbers of years, and I wish that the environment that I worked in was such an environment as Mary Kay is. They stand behind their product. They stand behind their people. It is a business, and a lot of people coming into the business, I think, fail to realize that it is a business, and it's a customer service business. And it takes a lot of work to service a customer properly. My wife works nonstop. She's always putting sales together. She's calling people. She's meeting people. She's trying to sell. And she encourages her independent consultants that are under her to do whatever they want to do within their business. Not everyone is pressured to be a sales director. Not everyone can be a sales director or should be a sales director.
All right,
it's important, but I think it's, I'm sorry to cut you off, but it's important to say that the money is there. Sales directors do make commissions, but the commission checks that sales directors get come from the 50% of the income that the company gets. So nothing is taken away from a consultant by being under a director.
Virginia Soul-Smith and Lynn, let me let you answer, respond to these callers.
Well,
Lynn.
I'm sorry. in terms of how much makes it to the end consumer, I would point out that right now on eBay, there are 40, when you type in Mary Kay, there are 46,216 hits for Mary Kay under health and beauty. And those are all products that, generally speaking, are former Mary Kay consultants trying to offload their shelves.
Okay, Virginia.
I'd like to speak to a couple of those points. Mary Kay and this caller are talking about, oh, it's a small business. Small businesses are so much work. It's so much work. Absolutely true. But Mary Kay doesn't work like a typical small business. If you own a shoe store and your Nike sneakers aren't selling, you can start stocking Adidas or another brand that's doing better. Mary Kay consultants work with one company. They are beholden to that inventory supplier. They aren't able to negotiate lower prices for the wholesale purchases that they make the way, say, another business owner could with their inventory suppliers. And they're constantly getting sales pitches from this company, including pressure to sign up for credit cards with high interest rates, which, again, a typical inventory supplier wouldn't do. So it's not this is a small business and it's so much work and it's the fault of a woman if she can't stick it out. This business model is set up so that it's incredibly difficult for the majority of the women to make money. And, you know, Laura mentioned the Good Housekeeping seal of approval and these other ways that she says the products are reaching consumers at the end market. But Mary Kay doesn't track their retail sales. She can't tell us how much they're actually selling to the retail market. So I think that's a very important point. All we know is that they sell $3 billion per year to their sales force. We don't know how much the sales force sells.
Laura, let me go back to you.
Okay. Well, indeed, all beauty consultants are independent contractors, and they sign a beauty consultant agreement for purposes of selling products to the end consumers. We can't and don't track their retail sales, but when you look at all of the beauty editor mentions we have in magazines regularly, are being named as a top beauty brand, I mean, you don't get there without having a significant number of end consumers in the mix.
But you're offering a small business opportunity and a career opportunity, and you can't tell people how much money they can expect to earn. That's the big problem. You can't have it both ways. You can't say, oh, we're only a wholesaler, we're only supplying product, it's up to the woman how she runs it, and also market it as a lucrative career opportunity, and then say, we can't tell you how much you can earn. You're either misrepresenting the business or you're just being irresponsible to your workforce.
Well, I disagree. People start a Mary Kay business for a lot of different reasons, and that's okay with us. A woman may want to just make enough money to send her child to camp for the summer or to buy school clothes. Others may want to make money to replace income that she may have lost but due to a career change or a layoff. But the overwhelming majority of women who sell Mary Kay are looking to simply supplement their income.
Well, that's not how you market it. That's not on your website. It says a lucrative full-time career opportunity. I was actually told by the sales director who recruited me that I could expect to make a full-time income in part-time work. All of these people here are talking about how they're working tons of hours to make this income. So I think that's an important point.
This is one view, and it's certainly a limited perspective.
Well, thank you, Virginia Soul-Smith, for your reporting. Lynn, thanks for sharing your story about your time, Mary Kay. And Laura Beitler, thank you for joining us. We're talking about Mary Kay Cosmetics and whether the business model works for women. This is On Point. I'm Wade Goodwin, in for Tom Ashbrook. Talking about what's behind the record sales at Mary Kay, and they are having record sales. Here's ABC's Ryan Owens. He took the cameras inside awards night in Dallas at Mary Kay Cosmetics.
Are you ready for the most exciting night of your life?
Yeah!
It's awards night at Mary Kay Cosmetics, and for the next few hours, hundreds of women will receive a lot more than little golden statues.
Featuring almost 2 carats of diamonds.
They're being recognized and rewarded for growing their business when so few others are. It turns out, even during the deepest of economic slumps, lipstick sells.
Joining me now in the studio is Douglas Brooks. Over the last 20 years, he has litigated numerous class action suits on behalf of victims of multi-level marketing schemes. Since 1995, he has participated in rulemaking proceedings by the Federal Trade Commission, arguing for disclosure and conduct regulation of the multi-level marketing industry. And also from Washington is Joseph Mariano, president of the Direct Selling Association, a trade association that represents roughly 200 firms that sells products directly to customers. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Hi, Wade. Thanks for having us.
Hi, Wade. Thanks for having me.
Yes. Mr. Brooks, let me ask you a question. We talk about direct sales, multi-level marketing, and pyramid schemes. Is there a difference?
Yes, there is. I mean, it's good to define some terms here. Direct selling means person-to-person sales away from a fixed retail location. Multi-level marketing is a kind of direct selling in which the salesperson can also recruit other people and make commissions based on what those people do. A pyramid scheme is a system in which people pay for the right to earn commissions based on recruiting more people into the scheme. A multi-level marketing system can be a pyramid scheme if everyone in the system there's no retail selling going on, or if the commissions are paid based on purchases by people who are in the system. So, you know, we can't say today whether Mary Kay is a pyramid scheme or not. But there are some disturbing things that we've heard in this show. And one of the red flags you hear is this pushing to purchase inventory, the pressure that people feel to buy more inventory than they can sell in order to get to a certain level in the plan or to stay at that level in the plan. The other disturbing thing that I've heard here is the lack of information about what people who are getting into this business can expect. The company does not release detailed information about its distributors, about what they can expect to earn, what they are earning, their attrition rate. There's a tremendous amount of information that in other industries, for instance, franchising, is provided to people. So I tried to do some rough back-of-the-envelope numbers before the show, and I found a press release from Mary Kay saying they did $2.5 billion in sales. I heard a number now that maybe they're up to $3 billion. And the number of distributors is, say, 2.4 million, something like that. If you do the division, I get around $1,200 per distributor per year on average. That's about $100 a month. Now, if a distributor is working 20 hours a month, which is modest when you think of the calls they make, the meetings they go to, the effort to try to sell, but even at 20 hours a month, they're not making minimum wage on average. So the only way they could possibly profit is based on commissions if they build up a downline. But that type of income is only available to a small minority of distributors. And again, I don't know what the numbers are with Mary Kay, but in the companies that I have sued and gotten discovery from, over and over again, we see attrition rates of between 90 and 100% per year at the bottom of the scheme. You see a tiny group of people at the top making a tremendous amount of money. And then you see a lot of people in the middle like Lynn and like Sarah, who we heard from earlier today, who Lynn says she's a good salesman. If a good salesperson can't make it in a business like this, how is the an ordinary person who's not particularly conducive to sales going to make it? So I think it's very revealing that someone like a Lynn or a Sarah can't make it in this business.
Mr. Mariano, I want to come to you in just a minute. Be patient with me. If you could see how the phones are, let me take a couple of quick calls. Susie's calling from Slidell, Louisiana. Hello, Susie.
Hi, Wade.
Hello.
I just want to say I'm very, very happy to hear other women come forth. I joined Mary Kay in the late 1990s. Was brought into the inner sanctum, so to speak, of the sisterhood when I began recruiting. Went really well for a while, and my director was going for national sales director, and suddenly it became, you know, a lot of pressure to try to recruit. And I kept saying, but Mary Kay says it's God, family, and then work, and that's the order. But all I'm doing is work. And I have a lot of women, potential recruits, who want to speak with their husbands. What should I say? And she said, you should tell them that it's easier to ask for forgiveness than it is permission.
Thank you very much. Let's take another caller. Steve is calling from Mandeville, Louisiana. Steve, hello.
Hi, Wade.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
You have a question or a comment?
Oh, no, I have a comment. I was involved in network marketing, not Mary Kay. My wife and I were involved in, from 92, we received checks until 2006. We received, you know, income from the company. And my vision of it is that it's a very cheap business to get started in. Therefore, a lot of people get started and don't put the sweat equity into building a business. And even, you know, when you got $40,000-$50,000 invested, you work. You got $600 invested, and you look up and you expect to make the kind of money your director is next month. It's unreal. One of the things I used to always tell people we would recruit for our company is you can't expect people to come knock on your door and say, hey, do you have an opportunity available for me? You've got to get out there and sell it. You know, you start any kind of small business and you're going to put 40, 50 hours a week in if you want it to be successful. Now, like I said, I don't know anything about Mary Kay itself, but network marketing is tough. It's a tough way to make a living.
Mr. Mariano, let me bring you in here at this point. You're the president of Direct Selling Association. It seems like multi-level marketing is for some people, but certainly not for everyone.
Well, that's absolutely correct, Wade, and Mr. Brooks had it right, too, at least in part. Some of the things he said were correct. This is a hard business. One of your callers said it earlier. This is a simple business, but it's not easy. Where I think some of the analysis has fallen down, frankly, on Mr. Brooks's and other parts is Mary Kay nor any of the other members of our association are pyramid schemes. Pyramid schemes are illegal, and they are based upon recruitment rather than product sales. These companies are all based on product sales, and it's hard to sell product, particularly in downtown.
Of course, they have no way of knowing. Mary Kay doesn't collect information about retailing. They really don't know how much stuff is retailed.
Well, let me talk about that.
DSA doesn't mean that you're immune from being a pyramid scheme. The FTC has shut down at least three in recent memory that I'm aware of.
YourTravelBiz.com, Equinox. Let me talk about this a little bit. There are actually seven types of salespeople that get involved in the business, and it's not all about money. Ms. Beitler from Mary Kay talked about this before. People are involved in this business for a variety of reasons. Some of them like the product. They buy the product themselves. They get involved because they want to buy it at a discount. Others have very short-term specific financial objectives. Others, yes, they want to build the business into a full-time career, and they might start on a part-time basis to supplement the family's income, but then become career sellers if they choose. A lot of people are involved in this just for the social contacts of being in the party or otherwise getting on stage and being recognized for their success and their achievements. A lot of people just love the product so much that they want to share it. So there are a variety of motivations. We've got 16 million people who sold for direct selling companies last year in the United States. They did almost $30 billion in retail, estimated retail sales as an industry. And the motivations for those people who sell and bought the product varied from company to company and, of course, from individual to individual. One of the things that's disturbed me about this discussion is that there's been no discussion really of the protections that exist. It was kind of disregarded. This is a business unlike any other. I think Virginia said it earlier that it's not like running a local business. Well, she's absolutely right. There are very few businesses where the companies that sell you the products will agree to repurchase virtually all the products that you've purchased if you decide to get out. That protection exists for Mary Kay and, in fact, for every member of the Direct Selling Association, where it's an absolute obligation to repurchase inventory that was purchased in the previous year if somebody decides to leave for at least 90% of what they paid for it. Those protections are absolute and really unparalleled in any other type of business, small business or large.
I'm going to take another caller real quick. John's calling from Colorado Springs, Colorado. Hello, John.
Hi, Wade.
You have a question or comment?
No, I have a comment. I think I just want to say to Virginia, thanks for finally having a credible journalist pull the onion back on what is an unseemly part of our enterprise or our economy, and that is multi-level marketing, which I equate directly to pyramid schemes. Too often we get brief articles in magazines about the great things that a certain number of people did. My wife made a lot of money in a multi-level marketing company, and I have the tax returns to prove it, but we didn't feel good about it because we knew we were doing so on the backs of tons of people that were losing just a little bit of money, but not enough money where they were willing to say that they had failed, and that's the part of the playbook that all these MLM companies try to throw at you. I think the one thing that people should do a Google search for what's wrong with multi-level marketing. Dr. Dean Van Druff wrote something probably 20 years ago that stood the test of time. This industry, so-called industry, tries to pretend it's a real company, a real business, and it's not. And I just wanted to say to Virginia personally that I'm very proud that she rolled up her sleeves and did the right thing here.
All right, I'm going to take another caller, James from Bloomfield, Connecticut. James, hello.
Hi, Wade.
Yes.
I would actually like to talk about the marketing itself. I actually worked for a multi-level marketing company called Vector Marketing for 2 years. And I think there's the most important thing you have to know about this is that it is incredibly difficult. The people who are on the show right now, they say it's very difficult. I didn't make a lot of money. In fact, I lost money. And then the marketing director says, well, it's a lot of money, so you have to put your back into it. And they're both right. Unfortunately, it's an incredible amount of work, and it's not helped because I hear all this talk about there's so much pressure, and it's true. I'd go into work, and my boss would say, James, why haven't you sold more? And I'm like, cut me some slack, Mark. I've been working for 60 hours this past week. And you hear all this talk about, well, you can make a lot of money. But the truth is, you can't. I actually made less than minimum wage the last 2 years. I had to leave the company because the culture was so toxic. It was awful.
Douglas, you were speaking to the issue of how much money you make per hour. Anything you want to add?
Well, what I want to add is this clearly with what we're hearing today is demonstrates the need for disclosure in this industry. The industry with Mr. Mariano at the head has been very successful at preventing any kind of effective regulation, including at bare minimum, there should be some kind of disclosure regulation for these companies. When you buy a franchise, you get an inch and a half thick volume of information about every aspect of the business, about your expenses, about other franchisees. You get nothing with multi-level marketing. And granted,
Mr.
initial
Brooks
investment
is, exactly
is right. cheaper, but...
Mr. Brooks is exactly right in this regard. When you buy a franchise, you're right. When you spend $1 million or $700,000 for a franchise or who knows how much, you do get an inch and a half first of disclosure statements.
As opposed
when
to a four
spending,
or five
when spending,
page disclosure
when you're spending
statement
$100
that,
or $50 to get involved in a direct selling business, somebody who's coming in who's only going to sell for a few hours out of every week, maybe only a few weeks 2 weeks out of the year, to give them the same kind of information and paperwork is absolutely ludicrous and is not appropriate and not necessary,
especially when there's
the kind of protections that we've talked about with the buyback of inventory.
What about the buyback of inventory?
Here's the problem with the buyback. It doesn't cover everything. It doesn't cover the business expenses that a distributor incurs. It doesn't cover the samples that she gives away at parties. It doesn't cover the catalogs that she buys. It doesn't cover her meeting expenses. All those people going to Dallas, they're spending money on airfare and hotels. The refund policy doesn't cover that.
And here's what Mr. Brooks is not covering when he talks about the things that people invest or get from direct selling. When somebody gets involved in direct selling, they might want to be involved merely to purchase the product. My own sister did that. She signed up as a distributor and made a few minor sales occasionally, but the primary purpose was because she loved the product and she got it at a lesser price. Some of these other people get involved because they build business skills. Very few of these activities actually cost people money. They're real benefits from getting involved. The areas where people do expend money, the purchase of inventory, are covered in an unparalleled fashion in terms of the protections that DSA and its members offer people who get involved. This is hard work. That's right. People do get involved, and they expend a lot of energy to make themselves successful. But most of the people who get involved, are doing this on a part-time basis. The people who want to work very hard, full-time, make it a career, they do so. And the percentages of people who earn ample incomes and sufficient incomes from those activities are actually quite impressive when compared to other industries and businesses.
Douglas Brooks and Joseph Mariano from the Direct Selling Association. Mr. Brooks, I know you're not from the Direct Selling Association. Thank you for joining us. You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. And you can follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Wade Goodwin, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.